All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO. Fix your minutes and I'm tuning in and I'm gonna enter in and up under your skin like a splinter, the center of attention, back for the winner. I'm interesting, the best things in wrestling, investing in your kids' ears and nesting. Attention please, feel the tension, soon as someone mentions me, here's my 10 cents, my 2 cents is free, a nuisance, who sent, you sent for me? Now this looks like a job for me, so everybody just follow me, cause we need a little controversy.
He hates Slim Shady, Eminem, Marshall Mathers, right?
I've told you guys a million times, I don't listen to hip-hop.
But like,
I just disagree with it.
And I understand why, but what if they're white?
Yeah, you thought you could sneak that one past me just because it's a white guy doing it.
Yeah, we're like,
fool me once.
Yeah, we're like, we know he's going to be like, no hip-hop for me, but if we say,
Put on dad rap.
He's white.
Now, Vanilla
Ice
broke my heart in the
90s. You may give
it a listen,
huh?
Well, I mean, just out of mutual respect.
Yeah. Are we rolling?
Rolling.
That sounded like you were checking something. Are we good?
Rolling.
We're good.
Rolling.
Everywhere?
1 second.
Yeah. No, listen.
We have we're good.
We're good. You're just doing the backup.
Backup.
Backup for the backup. Welcome to Jesse Wiseman's Crime Corner. I am your host, Jesse Wiseman. That one was weak. I'm actually embarrassed to start with that one. If it was good, I'd be like, let's go.
Authorities are desperately searching for a killer accused of going on a rampage.
The search for a possible serial killer.
An urgent manhunt for a man authorities believe is behind a triple killing spree.
Police here speculating that a possible serial killer may have struck again.
I told her to get out of the car, and that's when she became afraid, and then I shot her.
I'm your host, Jesse Wiseman. I am joined today by my co-host, Coop. Matt Coop Cooperson and Joel.
Sup.
Happy to be back.
Sup. Happy to be with you guys. The show does not work. I mean, it works. It's okay. It's fine. People like it. It's okay. But the real like groove, the real like humming on all cylinders thing, it's us, right? So I need you two to get your fucking shit together. But I love you both, and I'm so happy that we're here. Today, we've got another fun and flirty episode for you that's got all of our favorite things.
Yes.
Shady husband with a flimsy alibi.
Love him.
We love that. A heartbroken father hell-bent on getting justice.
Huge fan of those.
Love. I love a family that just will not quit. And a pair of grizzled law enforcement agents coming out of retirement to solve one last case.
My favorite part of the whole episode.
Favorite part. They have to be grizzled.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They have to be like, nah, I gave that up years ago, right? My mom, the old lady won't let me.
And swore like, I'd never go back.
They read the case and they're like, all right. Right? This is the mysterious death of Megan Parra. We will get into it. This one is mysterious. This case goes back and forth and all around, and you, when you think you know, it goes 360, 180, and then in the end, I don't know if you're gonna feel good, if you're gonna feel justice, but I hope. I did. Yeah, it wasn't what you wanted, but yeah.
I think this one does hold the record for the most reinvestigated case that that we've ever done.
It holds a couple records, which we'll get into. First, though, this was on my desk. Did somebody leave it or mail it? Does anyone know?
I do not know about that.
Okay.
Are you just going to open a random letter? Make sure there's no anthrax. White powder.
I know, right? Anthrax.
Or cocaine. Ooh.
Oh, that if that's the case, you better let me smell that to make sure it's safe.
Crime Corner. Okay. I don't know. I should proofread it first, huh?
Nah, just wild it in.
It's going to be
just a photo of a cock.
Yeah, it's going to be a summons.
Do you see how this is like? I just want to show it first for Patreon.
Yep.
Really quick. So I'm opening a letter that we get mail here, you know, sometimes.
Once in a while.
Packages, sometimes alcohol, once in a while. It's like, it says Crime Corner. It's got like the, you know what I mean? The wax stamped in the back. It looks so official, right?
It's also folded up in like the old fashioned letter.
I know. Oh my gosh. It's like a sepia. Remember when you used to like dunk the paper in tea?
To make it look
older. It's made from elephant skin.
Right? Jesse, I saw your cooking episode and wanted to offer you a trick I learned for making grilled cheese. You can cook them on a baking sheet in a 400 to 450 degree oven for 5 to 10 minutes per side. Or with your rolls, 3 to 5 minutes per quarter turn. It works great for keeping everything evenly cooked and much easier than a few at a time in a pan. Works really well with a thicker bread too, if you want to go fancy with it. Here's my recipe. One slice mozzarella, one slice sharp cheddar, one slice Munster or Gouda. Calm down.
I like Gouda.
Depending on your personal taste, on brioche bread and butter.
You're getting taught how to cook. Is it?
I don't know who it is, though.
On your own show.
A fan of the group. It says a fan of the group.
Is it a man or a woman?
Well,
I don't know. It just says it's anonymous. It's anonymous, and I actually think it's really hilarious that it looked, it's Crime Corner, it looks so official.
And it's just criticizing your cooking.
And basically just being like, hey, quick tip.
Cook better.
You're trash. You're trash. Now, whoever this is, love you. Thank you. This is actually really hilarious. But it's not that I don't know how to cook nice and elevated food.
Sure, sure, sure. I've seen it.
You've never seen it. But anyways, you got to take my word for it. It's just that I prefer to cook like nostalgic food. But thank you. I'm going to try it, actually. I'm going
to
try it. Thank you very much.
Shitty food.
Yeah, I prefer nostalgic. Like if you're at an event where you're drinking, where you're like having fun, where it's not like, you know, a hoity-toity, whatever, nice tray pass. I think it's fun to be like, dude, let's like pig out like we used to.
Hell yeah.
Partying. You know what I mean? And not have anything be like too fancy or feel.
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody out there is really thinking that like foie gras with, you know, quail egg on top of it is a comfort food.
Right. I get you. I could go.
Your shit was bomb.
Right. But
it tastes
good. Thank you. Thank you. Because it was our childhood.
Yeah. I even ate the burnt ones. You threw in the sink.
And then they got all soggy and watered down. Good for you.
And those were still good, too.
Good for you. And these are the kind of people that I'm cooking for. So do you know what I'm saying? Like, do you get where if I made something, like, a little bit nicer, they'd be like, eh, I'm getting Taco Bell.
Any extra culture is just going to be lost on them.
Right. And so why not, you know? Anyways, but thank you. That's pretty funny. Yeah, so we need to get into this case. It is, there's a lot going on. And
yeah, it ended up being a lot longer than I was expecting it to be.
I mean, that's fine.
But there's a lot of good info in here.
There's a lot of good info, and it is you know, there's 9 years in between. There's a bunch of different situations. So, Joel, I'm going to need you to stick with us, okay?
Okay.
Strap on and strap in.
Bit my ankle.
Just now?
Yeah.
Is it a scorpion?
No.
Yeah, it might have been a scorpion, bud.
No, it was something small. It was like a sting.
If you start having breathing problems, just try not to make too much noise until the episode's over.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Sorry for the interruption. Here's our broad.
Oh, yeah, that's...
All right.
Megan Parra.
Megan Parra. And we already said death, so sorry, Joel.
Somebody died.
She's going to die?
On June 27th, 2014, 29-year-old mother of three, Megan Parra, was driving to her home in Cottonport, Louisiana, when something caused her to veer off the road. Seeing that she was about to drive into one of the many rivers crisscrossing the state, she chose instead to steer her car towards a nearby tree. Surprisingly, I mean, it's a much softer landing hitting a tree than it is hitting water. Surprisingly.
I said the bayou, right? And so I'm like, okay, maybe it was just like a huge body of water, but like, gosh, I don't know. Well, I don't know what I'd choose.
I've seen the pictures. It's not the biggest body of water, but I will tell you one thing. I would rather run into a tree than get into any water in Louisiana.
For sure.
For all the gators and snapping turtles. And,
oh, that's very true.
And Louisiana natives that might be in there. It's dangerous. Joel, get your hands out of your pants. Surprisingly, despite traveling at 45 miles per hour, she only received some minor scrapes and bruises. When she was asked about the accident by the police, she told them that she had been distracted and accidentally drove off the road. Later, however, she confided in her father, Steve Ducote, that when she went to hit the brakes, they didn't work. For reasons unknown, she chose not to report this information to the police. Which is really strange to me, because she did give two different versions of the story. The one that she gave to the police, and then the information that she gave her dad later.
I think she was out of it. I think she was more out of it than...
Drunk?
No, like after getting hit? Like after running into a tree at 45 miles an hour? I know you're like, oh, minor injuries, but like, I think she definitely like...
Still rattles the brain.
Yeah, was sure, was not like... hopping out being like, man, I don't know, right? So
the tree came out of nowhere.
So she was just like, I don't know.
The following day, June 28th, 2014, Steve and Missy Ducote drove to the Cottonport, or drove to Megan's home. The couple had been babysitting their two grandsons while Megan recovered from the accident she had gotten into the day before. Upon arriving at Megan's home, Steve and Missy went inside to bring her some breakfast and see how recovery was going. When they walked into the living room, they were greeted by every parent's worst nightmare. Their daughter was laying on the ground in a pool of blood with a single gunshot wound to the side of her head. Next to her was a silver .357 Magnum revolver. And we've got a picture of the revolver right there. And it was a .357, but it was loaded with 38 rounds, 38 right. caliber rounds at the time.
Right. So the reason that Steve and Missy, which are Megan's parents, were babysitting the kids because Megan had to go to the hospital just to get things checked out overnight, whatever. Dustin, her husband, Dustin Parra, picked her up and was at the house. Megan texted her parents, hey, how are you guys doing? Everything good? Give me a little bit of time. Whenever you guys want to drop off the kids, just go ahead. They then got a call or text from Dustin saying, Megan's going to get in the bath. I'm going to go to Walmart to pick up prescriptions, and then I will come get the kids. So and that seemed normal. They live very close together. So it wasn't going to be a long time. After an hour, when Dustin wasn't there, they were like, let's just go and like make sure she's okay. Cause if he's not thinking anything, but if he's gone for that long, at least let's just check on the girl that just got out of the hospital, right? Yeah. So this is what they're doing, bringing the kids in, just checking, because Dustin had sent them this message that he would come get the kids, don't worry about coming over.
Yeah, and they never ended up showing up.
Right.
And Missy said that she was planning, Missy and Steve were going to make breakfast for the kids, and then as soon as they were done eating breakfast, they were going to take extra over to Missy, exactly. to Megan, and see how she was doing.
But this is the scene that they find, basically. Mm-hmm.
Missy, who was a nurse practitioner, immediately leapt into action and began giving her daughter medical treatment. Amazingly, despite her grievous head wound, Megan still had a pulse. As Missy was attending to Megan, Steve ushered the grandchildren out of the house and called Megan's husband, Dustin Parra.
Around 10 minutes after receiving the calls from Steve, Dustin Parra arrived home and raced to his injured wife's side. As he entered the living room with where Megan was lying, Dustin slipped and performed a textbook baseball slide, skidding through the blood and into his wife, as well as knocking the gun away. He was just like, he first of all ran to her baseball slit and then was kind of like slipping around in the blood, which is really fun to do to a crime scene. A crime scene, right? Like, you basically are just and you just like fuck up the whole thing, not helping at all.
He walked in there like one of the Three Stooges.
He's a little overweight. Is he an overweight fellow?
Yeah, heavyset fellow. We got a picture of him.
Yeah, this is him.
That's Dustin Parra.
This is
him. Of course he fell.
Right, but also he wouldn't move that quickly either in a baseball slide. I don't picture it.
Was it stomach first or like?
It was like a
ass first.
Do you know like when you're like sliding feet first into the thing?
That was one of the first things that I was wondering. Also, I was like, wait, is he doing it like he's going down a slip and slide, or like he's sliding into home base?
Like he's sliding into home, not first. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That's like a not funny, but picture it. Try not to laugh. Yeah, but anyway,
kind of tragic.
It's super tragic. But you
walk
just
in
go,
on your
bro.
Wife, you're like, oh, you
the
like
mom's
fall.
Trying to help, and you're just like, bro, what are you doing?
It's like that scene from The Office where Kevin spills his chili and he just keeps falling into it over and over again, except it's
slipping.
His wife's blood.
So that's real cool of him. He then pushed the pistol aside, like I said, began helping Missy bandage Megan's injury.
And Kevin was Dustin was a nurse.
Yes.
So he did have, you know,
he was a nurse
experience.
And then Megan's mom was a nurse as well. So they're both down there trying to
higher grade nurse. Nurse practitioner is much better than like an LVN.
Oh yeah. And a dude nurse.
Ugh. Talk about gay.
I don't care how high up they get. You don't want that person taking care of you. Do you know what I mean? They just don't have the instinct.
I like that it was quote unquote.
Yeah. Because they don't have the instinct, right? They don't have the caring instinct.
No, not at all.
Sorry.
If they do, then I don't want them touching me. They'd be a little bit too caring.
they like changing the diaper a little bit too much. You know what I'm saying? A few minutes after Dustin got home, first responders arrived on the scene and drove Megan to a nearby hospital. From there, she was airlifted to a trauma center in Lafayette, where doctors worked around the clock in a desperate attempt to save Megan's life. Despite their best efforts, Megan was unresponsive and showed no signs of recovering, basically brain dead. As Megan fought for her life at the hospital, officers began their investigation. All of the evidence pointed to a suicide attempt. There were no signs of forced entry or a struggle aside from a wine rack that had fallen behind the couch. The pistol, a .357 Magnum belonging to Dustin Parra, had initially been found lying next to Megan's body. What appeared to be a suicide note addressed to Dustin was found on the kitchen counter, which read, do we have a picture
of
that?
I have it somewhere in here. I'll find it in a second.
Dustin, please tell our sons that I have always loved them with all of my heart and soul. I'm sorry. Pretty.
Yep, there it is right there.
Yeah, so pretty, for a suicide note, it's really lacking.
Pretty short.
Know what I'm saying?
And personally, I've never found women to be really concise with their speech.
Yeah,
I mean, you get a text message from them,
I mean,
like
most real
long.
Suicide notes, especially from women, rambling, right?
Might as well call it a manifesto at that point. 300 pages.
Right. You know, most of the time by the end of it, they're like, I don't want to. I'm not going to do this. I'm like over it now, right? I've been writing for a day.
Oh, so she killed herself?
Was I reading your part, dude?
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
man.
Thanks for stealing my lines.
Sorry, bro.
If you want to take this next one,
I'll just take more lines.
Just go for it, Jesse. This is Jesse Wiseman's Crime Corner. Obviously.
Listen, I'm starting to become comfortable with that. No, I'd rather not be reading, but sorry about that. It was Coop on one page and then words on the other, and I don't do well with confusing things. Okay.
like.
And
words.
Again, shoot, can we look at the note just really quick one more time?
Yeah. I have too many tabs up. There we go.
It's written, and then like Dustin almost looks like added afterwards. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, like almost, yeah, at the top, where like
way up at the top.
Yeah, like he's writing, she's writing, whoever's writing, and then they go, "Oh yeah, better put who this is to." Huh? Feels very afterthought.
Felt
very
more natural
rushed
without the name at the top, because I mean, you never know who's going to be the first person to find your body afterwards. So you really, any suicide note should start off with to whom it may concern.
Yeah, yeah. Because you're like, are you talking to one person? Like, that's crazy.
What about everybody else?
Yeah. You don't know.
It is squished in at the top.
Told you.
Well, okay. You know, she's a little upset right now.
It's
she's
rushed.
She's about to blow her brains out.
Yeah, she's got to get this done because, by the way, women do not usually kill themselves this way. After roughly 24 hours of emergency medical treatment, Megan still showed no signs of improvement. Doctors were forced to inform Steve and Missy that there was no hope of their daughters recovering. Megan's family was forced to make the decision to take her off of life support. On the morning of June 29th, life-saving efforts were ceased and Megan passed away. Steve and Missy were absolutely devastated. They couldn't wrap their heads around the idea that their daughter would kill herself. She had a happy life with two young sons and a loving husband. She hadn't shown any signs of depression or suicidal thoughts in the months preceding her death. It just didn't make any sense that she would suddenly end her own life. Hoping for some answers, Steve and Missy and their son-in-law, Dustin, went to meet with the lead detective working on Megan's case. His name? Christopher Knight.
Ooh. Badass name for a cop.
It's a badass name, but
I wish he would have lived
wish
up to
he would have been a Christopher Knight, huh?
He could have been the hero of the story if he just got his shit together.
Serious.
Prior to meeting the detective, Megan's father Steve had already been growing suspicious of Dustin Parra. His clumsy and strange actions had struck Steve as being very odd. The baseball slide through the pool of blood hadn't seemed accidental.
I was going to say, what was it, Steve, that seemed weird to you?
Was it the baseball slide?
Was it the crazy baseball slide and slipping around like a stooge?
Something else we should point out is after he did the baseball slide, he pushes the gun out of the way. And then before giving any type of medical treatment, he reached into the pocket of the,
yes,
the paper hospital gown that she was still wearing.
I think it's important to note that, too. She is still wearing paper hospital shirt. Not comfortable. It's something that you would want to take off in the car, if not as soon as you get home.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's weird. But anyway.
This episode of Crime Corner is brought to you by Strike Force Energy.
Coop, do you know Strike Force Energy?
Hell yeah, who doesn't?
Dude, so this is a sponsor that was, you guys are going to know it, oldie but a goodie. They were one of our first sponsors on all shows. In the very, very beginning, veteran-owned, awesome product. They were backing us when no one else would. We love Strike Force. What's Strike Force Energy?
When you need to hit the ground running and keep going, reach for Strike Force Energy. This isn't just another energy drink. It's a powerful punch of clean, sustained energy with a delicious flavor that won't let you down, no matter how demanding your day gets.
So yes, you remember Strike Force. They are back. New and improved. New flavors, all sugar free. Turn a bottle of boring water into an energy drink. How many times in the studio here are we like, dude, is there any energy drinks? No, we didn't get any ordered. Like the Strike Force, the packets now that we're going to have at the studio are going to be miraculous.
I am looking forward to it. With Strike Force, you can make your own 16.9 ounce energy drink with no sugar, no calories, no stirring, and no shaking.
Really quick, that's important because most packets that you're putting into your drink are powder. This is liquid. It's going to mix with your water instantly and energize you.
I ain't got time to shake.
I ain't got time to shake this water.
Just add one pack to a 16-ounce glass to turn your water into a full-power energy drink.
Go to StrikeForceEnergy.com and use the promo code DRINKINGBROS for 20% off your entire order. That is StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use the promo code DRINKINGBROS, and that's 20% off every time you order, not just your first order. Every time you go to the site and get a couple boxes of Strike Force Energy, they have a lot of different flavors. Our favorite is grape, but every flavor is going to be no sugar, no calories. Go to StrikeForceEnergy.com and use the promo code Drinking Bros for 20% off your entire order. That is StrikeForceEnergy.com. Use promo code Drinking Bros.
Fuel your hustle with Strike Force, because when the pressure's on, you need a force to be reckoned with.
Woo! So then he pulls a picture of what?
Of their two sons out of the pocket and then sets that aside.
Mm-hmm.
Which, how would he know that the picture was in the pocket? And why would he think of doing that first before giving any sort of medical treatment? And actually, you can kind of tell.
The image is blurred out.
It's on the right-hand side, but they have it blurred out because the sons were 4 months old and a little over a year, like 4 months and 18 months or something like that. Mm-hmm. Small gap between the two of them, but also like very young.
Yeah.
Adding to the strangeness was the fact that Dustin didn't immediately start helping Missy treat Megan. Like I said, instead he had taken a moment to move the pistol away from the body and then reached into the pockets of Megan's hospital gown to retrieve a picture of their two sons. Steve was unsure how Dustin knew the photo was there and why he chose to pull the picture out before giving medical treatment. It seemed to him as though Dustin was staging a scene.
Yeah, and by the way, not very gracefully. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, obviously.
I think everyone there that was there at the time was like, huh? And then anyone that came after, as we'll hear, was like, meh. Seems fucking clear cut to me. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Suicide, plain and simple.
Plain and simple. Nothing weird here.
At the police station, Dustin's actions grew more suspicious. Although Megan's death was considered to be a suicide, Detective Knight still questioned each family member individually to rule out foul play. Let me tell you one thing. It was a bit of a slapdash investigation, if you ask me, but I'm no expert.
Yeah, it was just a like, what's going on? Cool. See you later.
So your wife killed herself? Ah, shit.
Cool. Tough luck, your daughter killed herself? Nice. your mom, you know what? It's like, okay.
Yep, that's what I thought. All right, see you guys later.
I knew it. I know these things, all right? I've been on the force for a long time.
Can't put anything past old Christopher Knight.
And we didn't do it in the beginning like we usually do, but Cottonwood?
Cottonport.
Cottonport, Louisiana. Mm. That's all I need to say.
I was tempted to land in Louisiana again.
I know, but we've done it.
Yeah, like
so many times.
Every time?
Yeah.
Every time we talk about Louisiana.
And that's just on the episode. Outside of the shows,
people are tired of hearing it. Louisiana. Yeah.
Missy and Steve had been waiting in the lobby while Dustin was questioned. And when he emerged from the detective's office, he threw his hands in the air and happily said, "Yes, I'm not a suspect."
Oh, God.
Like, what the?
Do you know what I'm saying?
No.
This is Cottonport. That's Cottonport at its finest. Okay.
And the way that Steve Ducote described it, if you watch the 48 Hours documentary that they did on it, the way that he pantomimes it is he's like, yes.
Yes.
Like throwing his fists in the air in victory.
So we've got a baseball slide. We've got a fucking woo. I don't know what is going on with this guy, but it's definitely not that your wife just killed herself. Wife and mother of your two young children. That's insane.
Yeah. At that point, Steve and Missy were certain that Dustin had played a role in their daughter's death.
Yes.
I'm still on the fence.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, too, is you can always go, and people like to say, I think even in the 48 hours, they were like, you know, people grieve in strange ways, right?
Some people celebrate when they grieve.
Some people baseball slide when they find somebody dead. You know what I mean? They just go back to, like, muscle memory from their old fucking ball days.
They're old T-ball days.
I don't think he played
days.
Baseball. He's pretty big.
He might have been a catcher, dude.
Where is he? There he is. He could have been a catcher.
He could have been a catcher.
Yeah.
I was a catcher, so that's how I know. You can be big. You know what I'm saying? You can be bigger. They actually need you to be bigger. In the days following Megan's death, Dustin's actions continued to make Steve and Missy suspicious. Surprisingly, only Steve and Missy. But anyway, the alleged suicide note had been returned to him. to Dustin. Dustin seemed to be unsure of what to do with it. He told Missy that he was considering throwing it away, but Missy insisted on him keeping it, obviously. With their distrust of Dustin growing, Steve and Missy knew they would need to hold on to as much evidence as possible. A day after being questioned, Detective Knight showed up at Steve's home to give him news regarding forensic tests done on the pistol. According to Knight, the revolver had been checked for fingerprints, and the results showed that Megan's prints were, in fact, all over the pistol. Dustin's prints were found on, to be on the pistol as well, but considering the fact that it was his pistol, that it, his prints are going to be on there. This wasn't considered suspicious. This was another piece of evidence that Megan did actually kill herself. But Steve and Missy still weren't convinced. So Steve, a little bit, the dad, grandpa, dad, whatever, at this point was like, fuck. I mean, like, when the lead detective comes to your house and tells you, like, dude, 2 days after, by the way, tells you we tested prints, it was all her, a couple of his, but not, you know, at that point, he kind of was like, all right, I guess she did. But then still being like, there are people that if they commit suicide, you go, yeah, there was part of me that knew, you know, they were struggling, depression, whatever. Part of me that knew the guilt of being like, God, I like should have called more or something like this, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's people that you're like, what? It just does not add up at all. So even getting this like forensic, you know, this forensic, the fingerprints from a lead detective, Steve was still like, but still, it's just weird. It's still weird, but then they kind of start, you know, behind the scenes, right?
Yeah, it's like he accepted the story, but it still didn't make sense to him. He's like, well, I guess she did, but it still doesn't seem right.
Right, where you go, he accepted the facts being given to him by the authority on the case, right?
Detective Knight.
Detective Knight. Lead Detective Knight.
This is the only picture I could find.
Oh, Detective Knight from Cottonport.
Could be him. I'm not sure if it is him, but it's the only Detective Christopher Knight that I could find online.
I might be mixing him up with Schaub. Another detective that comes in a little bit later.
Who we like, but anyway.
3 weeks after Megan's death, the official autopsy report was released. The cause of death was listed as a gunshot wound to the head. The manner of death was classified as a suicide. Megan's blood tested negative for any sedatives or other drugs, and physical evidence showed that the barrel of the gun had been in direct contact with her head when it was fired. As far as Detective Knight was concerned, the case was closed. Megan had killed herself. Despite the official ruling, Megan's family still refused to believe that she had committed suicide. Nothing in the previous months had indicated that she had any intention of ending her life. Megan had been happily planning a baby shower for her sister Betsy and even called 2 days before her death to ask what color balloons she wanted at the party. This was out of character for someone who had no plans of living through the end of the week. Adding further evidence that Megan wasn't suicidal was the fact that she was only a few months away from attaining her master's degree. For years, she had been tirelessly working on getting her degree so she could achieve her dream of becoming a school principal. Which, I mean, to each their own, but man, I would never want to be a school principal.
No, well, she's a kindergarten teacher at this point and wants to be a principal.
She's
a glutton for
punishment.
Exactly.
It didn't make sense that she would suddenly kill herself when she was so close to reaching her goal. To Megan's family, all of the evidence pointed towards murder.
Right, but as we know, if a medical examiner puts suicide on the report, very, very hard to get it changed.
Yeah.
The most you can get is undetermined. But this medical examination, too, was very weird because she was taken to the hospital and she was there, you know, they were trying to save her life for a long time, and then was taken to the medical examiner at that point had been. You know what I mean?
As far as I
other
know,
things, the, things had been washed, thing, right?
The majority of the evidence, as far as I know, the majority of the initial evidence used for the investigation was just from the people at the trauma center.
People at the trauma center, which they're not trained at all to like keep things or log things as far as evidence. They literally are just telling yeah. people what the injury is. And also, what everyone said when she came in, which everyone was saying suicide. So then the medical examiner gets a body from the hospital that was a suicide, you know.
Yeah, and if you're trying to treat somebody for a massive head injury like a gunshot wound, you're not looking for evidence of how it happened or who did it. You're just trying to save the person's life. So
exactly.
you're
ripping stuff off. Since the police were convinced that Megan had committed suicide, it was up to Steve and Missy to carry on the investigation into their daughter's death. The couple obtained copies of the crime scene photos and began going through them with a fine-tooth comb. I think there was like over 130 that they had to like go through of their daughter's body and evidence. But they did.
I couldn't believe that part that they had. I mean, just the, you know, the internal fortitude to, or the intestinal fortitude to go through those pictures in such detail.
And try and take emotion out of it and just look for inconsistencies, evidence, things that were off, right? So they got copies of the crime scene photos, began combing through them, looking for any evidence of foul play. Their amateur detective work soon began to pay off when they began noticing details in the photos that contradicted the official story. From the beginning, Steve thought it was strange that Megan would not only shoot herself, but do it in a way that guaranteed her family would find her corpse. First of all, Megan had never fired a weapon before. She had never even picked up a gun. She wouldn't even know what to do. Steve didn't think that she would even know how to load or fire one without some sort of guidance. On top of that, if Megan did in fact kill herself, she would have done it somewhere away from her home to ensure her two young sons didn't find her body. Even in death, she would have protected her children.
And I do think that's a big point right there, that from everything that every member of her family says, even if she did commit suicide, she would have never done it in a way where her two sons, even though they were young, they still walked into the room where she was. And she would have never willingly let that happen.
No, she was just texting, by the way, or calling. Like, that was definitely her. Mm-hmm. And she was just telling her parents to bring the kids by.
Yeah. So it's not like she would, it just doesn't make sense that she would set it up where she's like, oh yeah, bring the kids over, and then blows her brains out.
Yeah, and then Dustin, oh, I'm going to go take a bath. Can you pick up the prescription and get the kids?
What? So you guys don't think she killed herself?
Like I said, I'm still on the fence, but we'll find out.
There's no, it's one of those things that, is it suicide, is it murder, those classic cases. It is really, really hard to tell. Like, you can think all that you want, and things can be weird, but, like, only one person to... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you
do
commit suicide, only one person knows what happened.
Women will generally overdose on pills or something like that. It's uncommon for them to use firearms. That's mainly what guys do.
Yeah. Because we're pussies, and we like to party.
Gotta feel good before
That's
you
how
go.
I would fucking go out. Massive amounts of heroin.
Yeah, a lot of those female suicides just sound like a good afternoon to me.
Seriously, dude.
It was photos Mama of the pistol.
Mama's speedball gone wrong.
Not so many suicides, just a whole lot of whoopsies.
Yeah, just a whole lot of, like, calling up ex-boyfriends. The fuck, dude? What are you doing right now? And then someone finds them. Usually.
Yeah.
That's why there is a lot of botched women's suicides, or cries for help, as they like to say, because they get all fucked up and they start fucking calling people.
It was photos of the pistol that began giving their investigation momentum. When Steve took a closer look at the pictures, he noticed something strange that didn't match up with the official story. Let's bring up the picture of the pistol one more time. So knowing what you know now, is there anything about that picture that strikes you as strange, Joel? So at this point, what we know is that while her husband was gone, she took the pistol, put it right up to her temple, It's a 357 loaded with 38 rounds. Put it right up to her temple. Pulled the trigger.
Okay.
Okay.
Is there anything on the pistol that you think should be there that isn't there?
Blood?
Blood, maybe?
Blood, yeah. Hair, brain matter.
Right.
Anything like that. That pistol looks like it just came out of the box.
Clean
as
a whistle.
Yeah, clean as a whistle.
How far?
But he knocked it over, right?
I don't know. I mean, you know more about 357 or whatever, the power of it. If you were here, would it have anything on it?
It's
still
it's gonna,
even here. It's a powerful. Yeah,
it's going to spray blood all
even
over the place.
Even if it's in your hand in any way.
Yeah, and the majority of the time, I think it might actually be every single time somebody commits suicide with a pistol or with a firearm of any kind, they're actually going to find blood inside the barrel. They're going to find it on the
of
end
course.
Of the barrel. It's going to go all over the place because you have a spray going out from the entry wound and a larger spray coming out from the exit wound.
For sure. Okay.
And that's something else that...
It's really clean.
Something else that didn't match up when it came to the crime scene photos is the blood spray from the exit wound was on the side of her body of the entrance wound.
Oh.
So that would mean that if that was, in fact, the blood spray from the exit wound, at some point her body had been rolled over after being shot.
What do you think, Joel? She killed herself, huh? Rolled over?
You know,
she rolled over, yeah.
You still have control of your body for 7 seconds.
She was still alive. She was still alive when they found her.
She was rolling around.
She may be like cleaning the gun, right? Turning over. It's possible, man. Look.
Fuck.
In her death throw, she still wanted to keep a tidy house.
She's like, oh, yeah, I have kids. I got to make this look nice.
They don't want to see this dirty gun.
God. As can be seen in the crime scene photo, the pistol was surprisingly clean. The autopsy had discovered powder burns near the entry wound that indicated the pistol had been pressed against Megan's temple when it was fired. Although the .357 revolver had been loaded with 38 rounds at the time, they were still powerful enough to create a considerable blood spray. Strangely, not a single drop of blood was found on the weapon.
Why would he clean it, though?
Fingerprints?
Guess.
I mean, just make sure to get as many prints off as possible. But that's also a...
Because
but
hers,
his prints and hers were on
because
it.
Because hers weren't on it?
They were on it.
Well,
were
if
they?
It was cleaned.
Yeah. Didn't they say that hers and his were found on it?
That's if you believe what old
Christopher
Detective Knight, Christopher
Knight after
said.
2 days, we'll find out how long it actually takes to get fingerprints. But thank you, Joel. We do need to clarify, right? We do need to clarify where we're at. Because we're getting crazy, right? We're going all over the place. Go ahead.
The suicide note also struck Steve and Missy as being strange. Immediately following Megan's death, the couple had taken it at face value that Megan had written the note. Upon closer inspection, however, they realized something shocking. It wasn't Megan's handwriting. It appeared as though someone else had written the suicide note. As far as the handwriting goes, to me, that doesn't look like average female handwriting. It looks
a
little
sloppier. And according
to
Steve... Megan would write like some, her words would be like some of it's cursive and some of it's print. That's just like how she would write. Like the middle of the word is like cursive and like some of the words like are print and would kind of mix those two together.
I had a teacher in high school tell me that was a sign of like a really high IQ.
Really?
Yeah. If somebody switches back and forth between cursive
it
and
makes
normal,
sense.
Normal print.
I don't think that's true, because I used to do that on accident all the time when I was in high school.
Well, I'm not talking about putting capital letters in the middle of a word.
Oh.
We're not talking about forgetting what you're doing in the middle of doing it. Megan's family already suspected that Dustin had been involved in her murder. And although Christopher Knight had cleared him as a suspect, a review of his testimony showed that the detective had overlooked a few holes in his alibi. Further digging revealed that Detective Knight had overlooked more than Dustin's questionable alibi. Dustin gave 3 different stories about where he was when Steve had initially called him about Megan. According to Steve and Missy, on the day Megan was shot, Dustin had texted them, like I said, to let them know he was going to Walmart to pick up some prescriptions while Megan was taking a bath. Later on, however, Dustin contradicted himself while being questioned by Knight. For some reason, Detective Knight never followed up on this. Another piece of evidence that investigators overlooked was Dustin's admission that he had begun having an affair shortly before Megan's death. That's a biggie. That's investigation of the husband 101, right? Interrogation 101. How's your marriage? Are you having an affair?
Why would he say he had a side piece?
Well, I mean, look at the guy. He probably doesn't get laid much. He was just bragging.
Yeah, good point.
I think he was trying to be. There's also a tactic that you try and be really forthcoming and just be like, dude, I have been having an affair. Megan didn't know anything about it. I'm not hiding anything from you. So this is in the first interrogation. If it had come out later, that's weird, right?
Okay.
But I think Dustin was trying to be like, hey, I'm telling you everything, man. Like, I'm not a good guy, but she didn't know about it. Like, it wasn't anything like that. We weren't fighting about that.
Yeah, it is a known tactic with liars that admitting,
to be like, I fuck around, but I'm not a murderer.
Lesser offense that isn't quite as bad. To be like, exactly. Look, I'm being open. I wouldn't tell you about this if I wasn't being honest.
I'm not lying, man. I know that makes me like prime suspect, but like, yeah.
Power Ranger guy. Exactly. He was the best at it.
The best Skylar the Liar. Best to ever do it, dude. My God. One of our highest episodes, by the way.
That one was?
Really?
Yeah. I think it was the Power Ranger angle. People were just waiting to find out what he was, and he wasn't, right? Yeah.
He was just like, he had
a background. He was a background part, and they were like, God damn, we watched the whole thing to see which Power Ranger he was.
Oh, it turns out he was the Pink Ranger.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. So I think he was kind of just trying to be totally honest, and they were definitely, I think, in the interrogation being like, hey, you know, we know it's a suicide. Just kind of tell us. That's how I picture it. That they're just like, we know this is a suicide. Just talk to us and like get this over with, right?
That was an excuse that later on Christopher Knight used, saying like, I mean, at that point, it looked like totally a suicide. I mean, what do you want me to do? Like, look into everything? God.
Yeah. If somebody says that their wife committed suicide, what am I in it? What do you want me to do? This came as a major shock to the rest of the family. As far as they knew, Megan and Dustin hadn't been having any marital problems. Once again, Detective Knight made the strange decision not to follow up on this information.
He just asked the bare minimum amount of questions. Was like, yep, suicide, done.
Yeah. So let's recap too that like, so the parents at this point, this is all stuff that they're doing on their own, right? And with their own money and their own thing and like their own time. And at this point, all they really have is circumstantial because they can't get their hands on, besides the photos, but they can't get their hands on any other evidence at this point. So they're just like, no, there's something wrong. And it's not enough as far as a case to be like, we just don't like him. This was weird, right? Yeah. You have to have hardened.
Here's a picture of them together with their daughter.
Yeah.
You could tell they're related for sure.
Oh, yeah.
All of them.
Deep roots.
But
it should also be noted at this point in the investigation, Dustin is living with Steve and Missy. With their
Because he's cleared as a suspect.
Sons. Wait, he lives with the...
Yes, because he has the two sons. He needs help.
He moves in with them?
Moves in with them. So they're babysitting.
Jesus.
So they're trying to keep things cool while like getting on the internet and looking up like blood spatter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Living with the person that possibly killed
possibly,
your kid.
But they don't know. They almost want to clear him as well, right? Like they almost want to be like, I just need real evidence either way. That's all. Because it feels too weird and too rushed and too botched to just be like, okay, he didn't do it, right?
Yeah. And I mean, up until that point, they had had a good relationship with him.
Right.
So there was...
What if he didn't do it and he finds out?
Ooh, that, Joel.
You'd be like, damn, what the fuck?
Joel, man? Asking all the right questions.
That was a concern on Steve's part, or probably on both of their parts. As the weeks and months passed, evidence continued to point towards Megan being murdered. While reviewing Megan's autopsy report, her family discovered that possible defensive wounds had been found on her body. In the report, it is noted that bruising was found on her upper abdomen, consistent with bruises received while being restrained from behind. Now, it didn't say in the report that it was consistent with bruises received, you know, while being restrained from behind, but the positioning in the bruises would match up with somebody giving you a bear hug from behind.
Or a seatbelt. So the accident...
Or, yeah, that's a good point. Or,
the accident adds this other weird element to it, right? So we started off the case with, like, her running into a tree at 45 miles an hour with brakes not working and having to go to the hospital. So there's going to be some kind of bruising from something there, right? So
yeah.
Was it a perfect opportunity? I don't know. But carry on.
This information, along with the revelation of Destin's affair, helped Megan's family paint a picture of the day she died, as well as a possible earlier attempt on her life. Megan's family believed that shortly before her death, Megan had discovered Destin was cheating on her. She had confronted him about the infidelity and threatened to leave him. This led to the first possible attempt on her life, the car accident the day before she died.
I've got a police schematic of the car accident. Is that
important? Oh, yeah, let's bring that up.
Hit a tree.
Yep, you can see she driving down the road, went off the road and hit
a tree. Now, she did say that she got distracted and then was like, what? And, like, if she went off right there, there wouldn't be skid marks, brake marks, right? It would all be in that dirt, maybe?
Well, the fact that, so there were no skid marks anywhere. That's something that the police
noted. Oh, not
noted
even on
is,
the, okay.
No, not
so
even
the brakes didn't work for sure.
Not even on the dirt. She,
or she just didn't hit the brakes and fell
well, yeah,
asleep
that's,
or something.
That's the only thing that they could really conclude was that at no point did she hit the brakes because there was no sign that she tried to stop. She just went off the road and directly into the tree.
Then the part of her, doesn't live too long after that, so I wonder at what point she told her dad she tried to brake and they didn't work.
As far as I know, it was later that, like at the hospital
at
later
the hospital.
That night.
Okay.
Megan's family believed that shortly after her death, she discovered the cheating. This led to the first possible attempt on her life.
The car accident, yeah.
The car accident. When questioned about the accident by police, Megan had said that she had been distracted while driving and veered off the road. Realizing that she was about to drive into a river, she instead steered the car towards a tree. However, when speaking with her father later that day, she told Steve that when she attempted to stop, the brakes didn't work. She had hit the tree on purpose to avoid going into the water. The brakes of the car were never inspected to see if someone had tampered with them.
That was my first thought. And that never, we never find out. But the timing of everything is very strange, right?
Yeah.
The day after Megan's car accident, her family believed she once again confronted Dustin about his infidelity. And that led to yet another heated argument and threats of filing for divorce. At some point during the fight, Dustin grabbed his revolver, then in a brief struggle, he grabbed Megan from behind, placing the barrel of the gun to her temple and pulled the trigger. According to her family's theory, Dustin texted Missy about picking up prescriptions at Walmart to give himself an alibi. He then went to the store and waited for her family to discover her body. Once he received the call from Steve, he drove home and pretended to slip and fall in the blood in order to cover up the bloodstains he already had on his shorts.
And he probably did it to lighten the mood a little bit.
Just yeah, to be like, hey, this levity. Is rough. Yeah.
This is the blood on the shorts.
So
here.
This is blood spatter as well as the slide? Or
it
is
doesn't
the
look
slide
like a slide. That looks like a spray on his butt. Or like right. a satin.
Well, that's their cargo shorts. So that would be.
So is that the front?
Like on one of the.
Or a side.
One of the side pockets from what I can tell. I haven't seen a picture of the entire set of shorts, but that doesn't look like blood that would come from sliding through a pool of blood. It looks like a blood splatter.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes.
For the most part, their version of the story made sense, except for one glaring detail about the pistol. It had Megan's fingerprints on it. This piece of information threatened to derail their entire investigation unless they could come up with a reason for Megan's fingerprints being on the gun. In the end, they didn't have to explain why her prints were on the gun, thanks to a local attorney that had been following the case.
A few weeks after Megan's death, Steve received a phone call from a local attorney familiar with the case. The attorney informed Steve that Detective Knight had bungled the investigation yet again. Within days of her death, Knight had told the family that forensic tests had been performed on the weapon. The tests found that Megan's fingerprints were on the pistol, indicating she was holding the weapon when it fired. According to the attorney, however, this was impossible. The test needed a sample and match and to match the fingerprints that would have taken weeks to complete. There was no way Detective Knight could have gotten the results within a matter of days. I think this lawyer even said, if you put a rush on it and you need it as quick as possible, 14 days is like the quickest you can get it.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Interesting.
Steve took this information and confronted Christopher Knight, asking where the forensic report was. At that point, the detective completely denied ever claiming that the tests had been performed. Megan's fingerprints hadn't been found on the pistol because the pistol had never been tested.
Damn.
And Missy's brother, Steve's brother-in-law, was even there when Detective Knight said that they did the forensic tests and found fingerprints on it. And he confirmed, like, Knight said that they found Megan's fingerprints on there, and he even recalls having a conversation with Steve where Steve's like, I guess she killed herself.
Right. But if a detective just comes to your door and says that and doesn't write it anywhere, he can deny that he said it. By the time Megan's family learned that the pistol hadn't been dusted for fingerprints, it had already been taken out of evidence. Once it was relinquished by police, it was returned to its rightful owner.
Old Dusty.
Baseball Dusty catcher bear. and home plate taker. Dustin Parra, after weeks of being back in his possession, any chance of obtaining usable evidence from it had gone out the window.
God, Christopher Knight really fucked this case up bad.
What a cool dude, huh? He's just chill is what it is.
Oh, whatever, man. He's just like, said it was suicide. It was suicide, bro.
He's just kind of like, it's Sunday. Do you know what I mean? Like, what am I going to do? Work? Ugh.
You think he just didn't give a fuck or just lazy?
I think he was lazy. I think he didn't give a fuck. I think when he heard suicide, I think he didn't He didn't know the family. I think probably... Unless there is like, you know, suicide attempts before, drugs, depression, I think a lot of families would feel like it wasn't suicide, right? So that's not an uncommon thing. So he's probably just like, oh, here's this family that's like, oh, she would never kill herself. But
every family
she
thinks
did.
This.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, he's just a real cotton port.
What
fucking,
year is this?
This was
this around COVID,
point
right?
Was so probably around 2017.
Yes. Oh, shit. Okay. I found some photos of the house. Here, I'll put them on screen.
What
it makes it... This is like the crime scene photos. This is these are just photos of like all the different rooms it looks like.
So
old-looking house. It feels like the 80s inside here.
Right, but it's also Cottonport, Louisiana, stuck in time, right?
Yeah, they live with their parents. That's because it's in Louisiana. No, at this point, they were living on their own.
Yeah.
Okay.
Dustin didn't move in with the parents until after Megan's death.
A lot of wood.
And linoleum, huh?
Yeah.
That's linoleum.
They stopped advancing after the 1880s, I think. I'm surprised they even have linoleum.
That cabinet at the top right, that like gives me nostalgia.
I remember my
grandma.
Okay,
total grandma vibes.
They had been investigating it for 9 years. When was this?
Wait, the initial Well, it was in 2014. But this is in, we're just before the second investigation at this point. So
right. So 2014 is these crime scene.
These photos.
And so Louisiana, okay. That might as well be 77.
Yeah.
So this is actually quite modern.
It's the newest house in the whole state.
Seriously, dude. They were killing it.
Cutting edge. In those photos, you can see they only found two possible signs of any sort of foul play or a struggle. And one of them is the guitar that you see in the second row on the far left that had fallen over. And the other one I actually don't see in this set of photos. There was a wine rack that had been knocked over back behind a couch.
Yeah.
Okay.
And aside from that, everything looked completely.
I mean, I'd shoot her for not doing the laundry. Look at that shit. That shit is a mess.
It's a pretty messy.
It's all closed though. Everything else is kind of like that. The floors look clean. They're not. It's not cluttered. Just dirty clothes everywhere.
You clearly have never had kids, but yeah, it's all clothes. It's all clothes and poop.
And poop.
Yep. Yeah. And a faint poop.
So the same as my place.
Yeah. Having kids is the same as your
being a man.
Your trailer. Yeah. Being a dude living in a trailer. Yep. Uh huh.
After months of being stonewalled by the police department, Steve and Missy were finally able to convince a judge to reopen the investigation. The judge appointed Commander Dan Schaub as a new lead investigator. Commander Schaub began going over all of the evidence initially collected by Detective Knight, starting with the simple one-page report Knight had written after investigating the crime scene. Knight really did close this case way too fast because he closed the case 3 days after the investigation started.
And I don't even think she was dead yet, right?
Oh, yeah. She'd been dead for maybe 24 hours
when
at the point that he closed the case. And he only wrote a one-page report, and pretty much the entire report is like, yep, she killed herself.
Yep.
To fill in the holes in Detective Knight's report, Schaub started from square one. Knight hadn't bothered questioning the neighbors, which blows my fucking mind. Didn't even walk next door and say, like, oh, did you hear anything?
Does it blow your mind, though? Does anything Christopher Knight did
not at this
blow your mind at this point?
Knowing what I know now, at first I was kind of distracted by the flashy name.
The guy had his own shit going on.
So Schaub paid the neighbors a visit. Both neighbors reported hearing a loud boom that morning and placed the time of the sound around 9:15 a.m. This information allowed Schaub to begin creating a timeline. And it should be noted that one neighbor said that they heard a boom at around a little after 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, Schaub didn't think that they were a reliable witness. So the other neighbor that said 9:15 to 9:20 was like, okay, that must have been when the gunshot actually happened.
Right.
Schaub then dug into Dustin Perez's alibi. According to Dustin, he had gone to Walmart to pick up a prescription that morning, and Schaub was able to recover a receipt from the pharmacy with a timestamp showing he had paid for the medication at 9:43 a.m. At the end of his investigation, Schaub wrote an 8-page report that reached the conclusion that Dustin Parra had, in fact, been at Walmart when his wife committed suicide. The case was once again closed. So two times it was determined to be suicide.
Yes. Despite Schaub's report, Steve Ducote, what is his?
Ducote.
Wasn't ready to give up. He was going to prove his daughter was murdered, no matter how long it might take. Steve continued to review the crime scene photos and gather evidence while he searched for the smoking gun that would prove Megan hadn't committed suicide. This went on for over 4 years until 2018. Steve decided to call in the big guns. In 2018, Steve called up an old friend of his named David
Lemoyne.
Enter Lemoyne. David was a retired FBI agent living in Nebraska who had thought he had hung up his pistol for good years ago. Upon receiving the call from Steve, Agent Lemoyne dropped what he was doing and flew to Cottonport to review the evidence compiled by Steve. After spending the entire night poring over the information, he came to the conclusion Megan Parra had been murdered. Whoa!
And that's a hell of a friend right there.
Just to go to Cottonport? I know.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously.
Couldn't pay me enough money.
Just making it all up and stuff. being like, I got you, dude. I'll say it was a murder.
Don't worry, dude. I got it.
But I think it was really cool that he flew out there and then just spent the entire night reviewing this binder that Steve Ducote had put together. And then in the morning, he's like, your daughter was murdered, and I'm going to prove it.
Yes. This is like the part in the movie where we're like, fuck yeah, let's go, right?
Well, if Agent LeMoyne was going to solve this case, he was going to need a partner. Luckily, he knew just the guy. David called up a fellow retired FBI agent named Zach Shelton.
Shelton and LeMoyne.
Shelton and LeMoyne. That's pretty
good. I like
good.
That. Yeah, we haven't had a good duo that sounded good together.
I mean, not since Biddles and Watts.
I know. You can't beat Biddles and Watts.
They're still at the top of the list, for sure. Christopher Knight could have been up there if he wasn't such a dick.
I know, dude.
So, Zach.
Oh, I found what he actually looks like. That's him there.
That's Christopher Knight?
That's Christopher Knight.
Oh, okay, yeah, that is definitely him.
It looks like a guy who wouldn't care.
God, fuck that dude.
I think the other picture that you brought up might have actually been either Zach Shelton or...
I'm looking them up right now. Okay. I'll find him.
Okay.
So Zach Shelton, who, like David, was bored with retirement and itching for a new case to solve.
Hated his wife. Anyway.
In early 2019, Agent LeMoyne and Agent Shelton were officially deputized by the Cottonport police chief and put in charge of the new investigation, which is pretty fucking cool.
That is sweet. That
they were able to pull that off.
Yeah, back literally officially out of retirement, right, is what they're doing, yeah.
Them being deputized made it so they could actually wear body cams and they could interview witnesses and all of it would
do
be...
Do interrogations,
yeah, all
of shit.
It would be legitimate.
Here's Steve Ducote.
The dad?
No, that right there. That's David LeMoyne.
That's what it says. It's Steve turned to... Oh, Steve turned to an old friend. Okay, so this is the old friend. That's LeMoyne.
Oh, look at that, dude. That's the friend you turn to. Grizzled. Looks like he's missing an eye. You know what I mean? He's in combat.
He's a military veteran, FBI veteran.
Still militarying.
I mean, he's still military.
Yeah, he's still doing military. Okay.
LeMoyne and Shelton began their investigation by interviewing the guy responsible for fucking up the case in the first place, Christopher Knight. Detective Knight admitted that he should have been more thorough, citing his lack of experience as an investigator. He also admitted he had never sent the gun for testing, which was effectively throwing away valuable physical evidence. During the interview, Knight was quoted as saying, and this is a direct quote, "If I botch this, you know, then, I mean, my fault, you know?"
Yeah, he was such a piece of shit, dude. Like, he was just like, I don't know. Like, to a lot of their questions, he's like, I don't know.
He was so defensive during the interview, and it seemed like he was preoccupied with proving that he didn't do it on purpose. I mean, I fucked it up, but it's not like I did it on purpose or anything.
Right?
Like, well, dude, that's not what we're trying to prove here.
Go back to Ginger Frat Boy for a second.
Dusty?
To Christopher Knight.
Oh.
Doesn't deserve the name, but like, look at this picture and picture this guy just being like, I don't know. Why didn't you do this? I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know, man. Shit.
Look, my bad. Literally, he says, my bad.
Yeah.
My bad.
Like, it's whatever. Like, I did like the best that I could with the time that I wanted to work on it.
Did he get a slap on the wrist for this or anything like that?
No,
dude, it's Cottonport.
He's still working for the police department. He refuses all interviews. He's only released one written statement about it since then.
Yeah. After getting a heartfelt, my bad, bro, exactly, from Detective Knight, LeMoyne and Shelton brought Megan's husband, Dustin, back in for questioning. During the interrogation, Dustin once again admitted that he had been having an affair at the time of Megan's death, but he claimed his wife knew nothing about it. Dustin maintained that he had not been home when Megan was shot. Agent Shelton was unconvinced, telling Dustin, maybe she shot herself in front of you. I don't know, but you were there. LeMoyne and Shelton continued to pressure Dustin in an attempt to get him to crack. They called into question his baseball slide through her blood, the planted suicide note, and the affair. Despite the pressure, Dustin denied being at the house when Megan was shot and maintained his innocence. After an hour of questioning, Dustin Parra finally had enough and walked out of the interview. So once he was getting interrogated in the way that he should have in the beginning, like, even asked, Like, hey, man, you got to come clean. Like, were you you were there. So were you there when she shot herself? Did you shoot her? Because everything is pointing, like, telling them the evidence that they have, being like, do you want to explain this? And that's when he's like, okay, well, I'm going to go and get a lawyer, and I will see you guys around or whatever.
Yeah.
Putting the pressure on.
I'll see you guys in hell, effectively.
Yeah.
I
found bad news. Should I not reveal something that happens later?
No, you
later?
Shouldn't
reveal. Don't reveal it yet.
With LeMoyne?
Mm-hmm. We'll say it.
We'll get to it.
I know, now you're sad, huh?
He's a sweet cowboy. I got a good picture of him. Do you want to see it?
Oh, yeah, let's see it. As long as it's not giving anything
away. Oh!
There he is, right?
That's...
Well, we had him militarying. We have him cowboying.
He's the guy.
He is the fucking guy, dude.
I'm in love with him.
If I ever get murdered, find somebody that looks like that to investigate the murder. They're gonna.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say I'll Photoshop your face on that photo.
Could you please?
So you look cool.
Yeah. Could you please? Yeah.
Yeah. Make that the photo that gets sent around for my funeral. For nearly a year, David LeMoyne and Zach Shelton continued to investigate the case. The two former retirees were confident that they were on track to prove Dustin Parra had actually murdered his wife. Sadly, LeMoyne would never get to see the case's conclusion. In early December of 2020, David LeMoyne contracted COVID-19 and passed away just 3 days after Christmas.
Like, what the fuck, dude?
That's bullshit.
He got the first wave.
Yeah. I mean, that was like early on. That was the first year of COVID.
Yeah, when they like didn't know what to do about it. So they were just like, I guess you're dying, dude. Like,
well, and he was smoking. You know he was.
Oh,
he had to be.
Oh,
he looks like the Marlboro Man. Of course,
he was drinking, smoking, jacking, jerking, motorcycle, boom,
horse riding, boom. I got a picture of them interrogating him.
Yeah, that's when they were interrogating Dustin Parra.
They're sitting on both sides of him.
One behind him, fucking with him.
In the interrogation, it's so textbook and so like they were grilling the fuck
old
out of that
school,
dude.
Just
Love
slits
it.
His throat from behind.
Just old cowboy grandpa's coming in, and be like, "Son,
we know you did it.
We know you did it. The only thing you're gonna tell us now, boy, is how I did it.
Yeah. The truth."
Just all we want is the truth, son. I think there is that. I heard a little bit of the interrogation, but it's like, you're going to have to come clean.
Oh, yeah.
Son.
The way they handled the whole thing was like,
we
know you did it.
I would have cracked.
Just tell us what happened.
Immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Although they had lost Agent LeMoyne, Steve Ducote and Zach Shelton were determined to see the case through to the end. To help fill the void left by LeMoyne's death, Steve brought in an independent investigator named Eric Richardson who took over the evidence. Richardson was the one to finally discover the evidence needed to connect Dustin Parra to the murder.
Shelton and Richardson. Yeah, there's like they've gone through a couple different iterations of this, right? Partnership.
This team.
Yeah. Richardson found two pieces of evidence that when put together proved that Dustin Parra had been at the crime scene when Megan was killed. The shorts he had been wearing the day his wife was murdered had been entered into evidence during the initial investigation, but the blood stains on the shorts had never been properly analyzed by an expert. Of course, because Christopher Knight was like, no need, throw him in a bag, we're fine.
Yeah, give him back to Dustin.
It's all good. Give all his shit back to him, dude. When examined by Richardson, he concluded that the patterns matched the high-velocity blood spray one would expect to see if the person were standing next to someone who was shot. The lack of blood spray on the pistol itself, not even drinking. Red Bull only, right?
Well, that's a problem.
It's almost worse, huh? The lack of blood spray on the pistol itself indicated that the weapon had been wiped clean after being used. This was finally the evidence they needed to prove that Dustin Parra had been the one to shoot Megan.
And that,
damn,
that really should have been noted by the investigators in the first place. The fact that there was no blood on the pistol, I would think that even you work as a cop for like a minimum of a year, you're going to respond to a few suicides. And
right.
That should be common knowledge that there's going to be blood on a murder weapon.
Right. And I think it's the reason why Steve Ducote, the dad, the grandpa, dad, whatever, was going so full force with this, because he was just like, I'm a civilian and I know all this shit.
Yeah.
Right? So something's got to be fucky. And that's why they worked on it at this point. What are we, 9 years, 10 years in?
You think that's the wording he used?
9 years now.
Something's fucky?
Something's got to be fucky.
I think he did. Probably did. He said, Missy, something's fucky. Yeah.
This guy? That's the dad.
Yep, that's a dad.
Oh, yeah.
Something's fucky for sure.
Looking out at the bayou, he's like, you know, Missy, I don't like it. It's just fucky. It smells fucky.
Something smells fucky, and it ain't the swamp. Fucky.
Yep. All right.
The new evidence was enough for District Attorney Charles Riddle to take the case to a grand jury. On October 13th, 2021, the jury returned a charge of second-degree murder, and Dustin Paro was arrested.
And that was immediate. Like, they were just like, yep.
Which it should have been in the first place.
Yeah, second degree. Go ahead.
Despite the newfound evidence, it was still going to be difficult to convince the trial jury that Dustin had been in the room when Megan was shot. But in the end, they didn't have to convince a jury. On March 24th, 2023, Dustin accepted a bargain in which he would plead no contest to the negligent homicide of Megan Parra. During his plea hearing, Dustin admitted that in the months leading up to her death, he and Megan had been having marital issues. Dustin went on to concede that during his final argument with Megan, he had his pistol in his hand and had a physical altercation with his wife. During the fight, Dustin claimed the gun went off and hit Megan in the head.
So negligent homicide, by the way, in Louisiana at this point is 5 years only.
And that's like kind of on par with what, manslaughter?
Yeah.
So that
better than nothing.
I don't know.
Better than nothing, but basically the parents were like, okay, we'll take that. Because they could have said, no, we're going to trial. But they were like, as long as he answers these questions and like is saying that he did it.
That it was him that did it
and wasn't her, then okay. They also wanted something else, but go ahead.
For his role in the death of Megan Parra, Dustin was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Due to the plea bargain, he was expected to spend only 18 months in prison and the remainder of his sentence on parole. In April of 2023, Steve and Missy Ducote were granted full custody of their two grandsons. Unfortunately, the custody wouldn't last long. After serving only 9 months in prison, Dustin was released on parole, and on February 5th, 2024. Since his release, he has successfully regained full custody of his sons.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Damn.
What?
Got out after 9 months, and then almost immediately after getting out, he was able to regain custody of the kids. As far as I know that he was, during the trial, at that point, he had already remarried, and
yes, he was
living
married
with his new wife.
Oh, yeah. God.
And so him and the wife were raising the kids.
Yeah.
And the parents were like, okay, cool, we'll let him spend literally no time in jail. He's going to admit that he shot her so that her sons know. That was one of their main things. They wanted the sons to know that their mom didn't commit suicide and leave them.
Shit, they're going to grow up and kill their dad.
Yeah, and then they wanted full custody. Now, I'm guessing probably the parents are elderly at this point.
Oh, Stephen Missy, yeah. They've got to be in their 70s at this point.
Maybe why he was able to, and I think the wife stayed with him.
I was curious about that.
Because it's not like you're waiting even 5 years for the guy to get out.
Yeah, 9 months, that's
I have the exact, like him pleading guilty, exactly what he said.
The transcript?
The contendere plea or whatever.
Nolo contendere.
Nolo contendere?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you wanted to read it, it's not, I mean, here it is, it's on the screen.
Yeah, well, pretty much every question.
He answers it and then says, yeah.
Yes, sir, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he starts saying that fucking line, whatever. That's what got him out early, right?
Yeah, that's what his lawyers advised him to say is, yes, I'm not contesting as part of the nolo contendere plea.
So basically it's saying, yes, I'm not telling you anything different because of this plea. So you're not really saying yes. You're saying, yes, I've entered this plea, so
it's not
no contest.
It's not a real firm admission of guilt. It's more like, okay, if that's what you want to hear, I'll say it.
That's the deal that I've done. So I guess yes. It's kind of being like, you're making me say it.
So that's why
but
got
again,
out
the
early.
Parents got
to get out early. That's why he did that, right?
Wasn't really early. They sentenced him to 5 years, but pretty most of the time, if you're good and you've spent some time served, you're not really, not going to spend full 5 years.
But if he got convicted of straight up murder,
second degree, it would have been life.
He would have been
15 to 20 years easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and like, they didn't get to have a trial. So you don't even get to bring into it all the shit he did to cover it up, all the lies, not calling 911, like leaving.
I'm not a suspect.
Leaving his wife alive, even if it was an accident, you left her alive and went to Walmart. At least go to, you know what I mean, a Costco or something. But
you can spend hours in a Costco.
That's
Walmart's
crazy
in
that
and
he
out.
Got his.
He got his fucking
back because
he got his fucking kids back.
The way that they set it up, the parents, the grandparents, is that they have full custody and he would have to go like lobby, get lawyer, like go to court to try and get custody back. The parents would have impact statements. It would, you know, it would be this long process that he would probably never get them back. I think that they are probably elderly and maybe can't care for them. And he was able to show like I have, you know, income, I guess. You said you saw his LinkedIn. Did someone see his LinkedIn?
Oh yeah, he's still got an active LinkedIn. I mean, this guy's back on the streets.
Let's see what he does.
Who does?
Dustin Para.
We'll look him up. But yeah, that's
If you just search Dustin Para LinkedIn, we could take a look at it. Yeah, I can't believe he was able to get custody of the kids back. I mean, if Steve and Missy are getting up there in age, they're definitely gonna the kids were like 4 months and 18 months old or something like that. So they probably are going to be getting close to dying before they're 18 years old.
Right.
But I mean, goddamn, giving them back to the guy who admitted that.
And are they not at a point where they can choose? Can't kids choose where they want to be at?
I think it's
13,
like
14.
Yeah. Around
like
13
this?
Or 14. I think you can have more.
So
of
are they
a,
not that?
More of a say. No, if it's, let's see, if that happened in 2014 and they were both under 9 years old, I mean, they'd be getting, or both under, or around a year old or something, like they'd be getting close to that. But
I don't have a LinkedIn account, so I can't get into it.
Oh, no, that's fine.
You'd at least have the.
Anyways, I just wanted to see what if he was able to like get work somewhere, he was probably able to show.
There's like a picture of him at a football game here with like his kids.
Probably the wife and the kids.
But it's only 200 by 200, so I can't really make it bigger.
What in the fuck? And look at them. LSU. LSU. Oh, look at us. No low contendo or whatever, right? That's what he says.
Yep.
No low contendo. All right. Well, again, another trash story from some weird-ass parish in fucking Louisiana.
Yeah.
And everyone involved, besides the grandparents and Megan.
And the cowboy.
And then the cowboy.
The people from outside
the
of Louisiana.
The Richardson. Everyone except for Richardson, Lemoyne, and Shelton. And the grandparents, obviously.
Yeah.
Can go fucking jump in the bayou, as far as I'm concerned. But interesting case. Takes a lot to prove, I guess, that like a woman that had just gotten an accident and is still in her hospital gown would like find the husband's gun that she's never used and shoot herself. You know what I mean?
Just randomly blow her brains out.
Yeah.
With
one of those like we use the husband's gun.
I think,
and like, you know,
I think the lesson is if you want to get married, you have to be willing to understand that there's a possibility that you could get killed and they'll get away with it pretty much.
Yeah, there's a possibility. And then there's also a possibility that your husband, wife, whatever could fucking commit suicide and you'd be in jail. That is also a possibility, right?
Oh, yeah. What if he didn't do it?
Joel?
Yeah, marriage sounds terrifying.
Yeah, really. It really is. You're really putting your entire life into someone's hands.
Yeah.
Really sticking it out there, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Sticking it in there, too, sometimes.
Sticking it out there and then sticking it in there. It's got to be out there first, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In order to stick it in.
True. Like,
everybody knows that. Everybody knows that.
Talking about something protruding?
Yeah, it's like out. You think when this guy...
A lot of ins and outs to this case, right? A lot of ups and downs. A lot of bombshells. A lot of blowouts, right? Almost like Coop's favorite thing.
A prolapse.
Yes.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.